anybody has a question. Yes, please. Loud. Or if Johnny has a... Yeah.
That they were forced
yeah.
to do it?
Yeah.
As if they didn't have what I understand.
Like free will?
Oh, God, I hate this question. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. So when we're thinking about the boyfriend or girlfriend who hurt us in the past, many of us have those stories. Then... I was encouraging you to think that the boyfriend or girlfriend who had a choice didn't exist. Okay? You can only get upset at someone who's hurting you if you believe they have the choice to either hurt you or not hurt you, and they're choosing to hurt you. So if they were somehow compelled to hurt you because of something you did, then you couldn't be angry at them, right? If it was your fault somehow, you couldn't be angry at them. And that's the case. They're always your fault, right? Everything's always your fault. But the good stuff's also your fault, so don't feel so bad. So Kim's question is, doesn't that negate free will? Okay. And what I learned in Hamburg, right, Martin? Where are you? Somebody raised their hand and said, we have no choice but to accept free will. But more seriously, the Chinese are obsessed with this question also. Like, they bug me about it all the time. If everything is coming from your past seeds, then the decisions you make are preordained by your past seeds. So that means you don't really have any choices. You know, you will always make the decision that's based on your past seeds, and it's not really a decision then, is it? It's just coming out of your past seeds. And my answer to people is always that thing about outside people, okay? Like, is everything coming from you? Yes. Are the people you meet coming from you? Yes. Does that mean you're living in your head and you're the only person in the universe? No. Well, why not? Because they are projected from your seeds as people who are separate from you. Your seeds project them as other individuals. So you can have a relationship with them. You can love them. You can be friends. You can be Dharma students together. You can have a relationship with other people only because they are external to you. And then... Dharmakirti, Master Dharmakirti, asked that question. He was also very concerned with that question, and he answers it in a famous book called Shingyudrupa, which is The Proof of Other People. It's a weird name of a title, right? The Proof that Other People Exist. And I think that has to do with free will. I think the answer to the free will question is very similar. You project a feeling of free will, and you make choices based on that. You have a free will which is forced upon you. Does that make sense? You do have a free will. You do make decisions. They are, what you decide is decided by the earlier decisions you made, but they're still decisions. You still have choices, and you still sweat over it, and you still make a decision. And so in that sense, you have free will. From the other person's side, they did have a choice to say something to you or not, or to break up with you, or whatever it was that they did to hurt you. They had that decision. How you perceived them was preordained by what you did in the past. How they see themselves, we have no idea. And we won't know until we can read minds. Very famous logic statement. It's if you are not me or someone like me, don't try to guess what's in other people's minds. Because you don't know how they're seeing. It's the dog chew toy and the pen thing. Everything's a chew toy and a pen, you know. They were maybe trying desperately to be kind to you and help you and support you. And then you heard it as criticism or breaking up with you or stuff like that, okay? So we don't know what they were thinking and we don't know what they were trying to say to you. All we know is what you heard. I like the example of when Lord Buddha was under the Bodhi tree and he was about to become enlightened. And there's a story that all these demons shot arrows at him to distract him in the last moment before his enlightenment. And they turned to flowers halfway to his face. And they just shower flowers down on him. And they're throwing spears and shooting arrows. And I think that whole story is a big metaphor for how you see other people. You know, they could be trying to help you. It happened to me recently. I was with someone and I was sincerely trying to keep them from being very badly hurt. And I spoke to them and then they got very angry at me and they took it the other way, the completely opposite way. And it was very disturbing to me because I tried really, really hard to help them and to serve them. And then it got all turned around. It's the opposite of the, I was throwing flowers and they turned into arrows. And, which is my karma, right? But, so I think, from your side, they didn't have any, you don't have any choice but to see what you planted. From their side, they could be trying to be kind to you and help you, you know. And you won't know until you get close to enlightenment and you can read their mind, okay? Yeah. 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 Yeah, good. Mikmetsewa, Dharchen. Mikmetsewa. Yeah. By the way, do you have the form that we worked on today? Is it ready? Can it be ready? No. Not. Yeah. Is it printed? Yeah, well, what's that got to do with anything? How about a dinner or something? Handed out a dinner or something? How's that? Okay. Okay. So how does that change if you know they're coming from you, right? Oh, I'll give the example of a relationship with someone, right? So you're having a relationship with someone and you're feeling very good about them, you know, like you're in love with them. And then they start saying terrible things to you or bad things to you and then you're like, No, I love you, you know, I really love you. And then if you don't understand emptiness or that they're coming from you, I think I know from experience that's very painful. You are deeply in love with them and they are saying terrible things to you about you. And you're like, no, you don't understand, I'm totally in love with you. And they're like saying terrible things to you. And then if you don't understand that they're coming from you, it throws you into some kind of despair or you feel very hurt and you think, oh, this is crazy, you know. I love them so much and they don't like me and I don't understand, you know. But if you've studied emptiness and you understand that they're coming from you, your reaction to that in that situation is to automatically think, who am I hurting? In the same way, who do I speak to in the same harmful, hurting way? you know, and then you, rather than focusing on this partner who's not in love with you or something, you just try to love somebody else better. That's the reaction of a yogi who understands emptiness. They will, to fix the partner, they will try to show more love to someone who needs their love, and then the partner will change. And try to understand the implications of that. All problems in your life can be fixed by doing something pleasant to a third party. You see? So the yogi's way of life is delam. Delam means path to bliss, but it also means a blissful path. It means once you understand that things are coming from you, your reaction to things you don't like is to do the opposite to third parties. And then the partner changes from that. So the method of a person who understands emptiness is always pleasant. Okay? Like, my husband's always getting angry at me. Well, so be more patient with your children. And that's pleasant to do. You see what I mean? I don't have enough money. Also, help someone else make money. It's a very pleasant exercise. I don't have a partner, so help a lonely person. And that the required deed to plant the seed for the things you want is always pleasant. So it's so crazy that we don't do it. I don't know. Go ahead. Yeah. No. Oh yeah. Yeah, only a Buddha. They're mutually exclusive. To a non-Buddha, the direct perception of ultimate reality and the perception of normal reality are exclusive. You can't see both at the same time. It's not possible. To put it in simple, very simple, basic terms, one is an absence of something, and the others are mostly positive things. You can't see a person if you're only focused on the absence of something. So they're mutually exclusive experiences for anyone who's not a Buddha. Something happens when you break through to enlightenment that you can focus on the absence of the person who was never there and could not be there, and the person who is there. You can see the Yugya Duck and the Megya Duck at the same time. And only a Buddha can do that. What happens to their mind? I think that question is best explored by discussing the causes of their mind, the karma that has created their state of mind. So I think somehow, if you explored what has created an enlightened person's mind, the karmas which has created that mind, you would understand how they could be in both realities at the same time. Go at it that way. Explore it that way. Yeah. Aisha. It takes every second spent in the direct perception of emptiness takes trillions of good karmas. Trillions of good karmas. Every second you're in the direct perception of emptiness takes countless good karmas. So it can't go on very long. For a normal person, it can't go on for more than 20 minutes or something. And that's the result of countless lifetimes of effort. Okay, so countless karmas have been collected to reach that place. Okay? And then what about the second time? What about the next time? I can only answer from scripture. Okay. Experientially, it might not happen again in that lifetime. Okay. But according to scripture, it does happen. It begins to get more frequent, and you do it again, and you can't move up unless you perceive it again. So, that's a scriptural answer. You know, scripture says you have to keep seeing it. Experientially, I think it could take more than one lifetime to see it again. Is that okay? Yeah, okay. Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Just continuing with the same question.
Yeah.
So maybe you can have the direct perception of emptiness in a previous life. You already had it and you don't know it.
Not possible.
So you would know. You
would know. Yeah. But there's a childhood, right? There's a period that you're a child. So up to the age of about 16 or something, it seems to be the case. There's a thing called bhakshak sepa, which means your past life seeds suddenly open from your past life. But like as a baby, as an infant, you know, breast milk drinker, I don't know how conscious it is then. I don't think it's very conscious at that point. But there's an age in the monastery, they would say between like 12 and 16, that suddenly it all comes back to you, what you've done and who you've been and if you've seen it before. I can say that if you've seen emptiness directly, then you will see your future lives and you will see that you will be taken care of from the time you're a baby by high masters. You know, you will always meet high masters and they will take care of you your whole life. Typically, seven more lifetimes is typical after you've seen emptiness directly to become enlightened. And you can experience that. It's a weird thing, right, that a number should come into your head right after you saw emptiness directly, like seven more, you know. But it does, okay? Very typically it does. And then later in my life, I found in the Abhidharma, there's a thing called Len Dumbawa, which is, it's a seven timer. It's called a seven timer. It's, so that number is in, you can find it in scripture, but I think most of you will hear it before you read it. You know, there's somebody will whisper in your ear and now seven more to go. And it's, and apparently that's typical. It's nice, by the way, to work on your meditations, have something happen, and then confirm it in a book like 10 years later. You know, find it in a book like 10 years later. It happens a lot if you practice regularly, not even very, fanatically, but regularly, which is better than being a fanatic. You know, you just, every day, you just... What's his name? Swami Shivananda called it asinine persistence, jackass persistence. And you just, if you've ever seen a jackass in India, they're, in Tibet they're called pungu. And my lama used to call my other teacher, his nephew, pungu, jackass. That was his nickname for him. And when we were driving around in a car, he'd always tell the driver to stop and he'd point out all the donkeys we ever saw and say, look, there's pungu. So I know that's how I know the word. And they just plod along, you know. And I had a couple of donkeys when I was young. We used to go camping in the mountains and we'd take a couple of mules with us and you load them up and then you say, okay, let's go. And they decide they don't want to go. And there's nothing you can do. There's just nothing you can do. You can hit them, scream at them, pull their ears. They'll just ignore you. And they'll just stand there, you know. And when they decide to go, they will go. But when they go, they just keep going. That's why you take them. Because they'll carry your stuff for like 50 miles. And they won't say anything. And they don't go fast. They just keep going, you know, indefinitely until you tell them to stop. So Swami Sivananda said, just keep going, you know, like a donkey, slow and steady, you know. So, like that. It's hard. Yeah, good, yeah.
And so, versus clarification, scorching them with the four powers,
yeah.
I was wondering if you could maybe go to the difference between scorching and destroying and how that relates to justice.
Yeah, yeah, good, okay. The image that always comes in my mind is a poor movie that I saw. I must have been on an airplane called, I think it's called Broken Arrow. It's John Travolta. At the end of his career, and there's a nuclear weapon at the bottom of a salt mine, right? And then I can never get this image out of my head. He's straddling it. It's between his legs, and he's trying to pull the wires out, and it's ticking down, you know. And I'm just thinking how much that's going to hurt when that baby goes off, you know. And it's the weirdest image. I always have it in my mind. And then, of course, he tears out the right wire. And it saves 50,000 people and him and his equipment. And then he's... But the bomb's still there, right? The metal casing and all the plutonium and all that stuff, it's still there. It just will never go off. So there's a big debate, even in the fourth chapter of the Yoga Sutra, there's a discussion about it. Karma Shukla Krishnam Yoginas Tribidam Itarisham. It means it'll just never go off. But whether or not those potentials are destroyed in your mind, the scriptures say no, they're not destroyed in your mind. And I know where your question's going, but I'll just say a little bit more. If you could, at will, destroy a seed, then there would be no justice in the world. See, you got to get what you do. It's got to come back to you. And that's better. It's better than having someone who makes random decisions either way. You know, I feel a lot safer, you know, just knowing that I'm going to get exactly what I give. Then... trusting to some fickle person who may or may not decide that I should die in a fiery car crash, you know. Like, I'd rather, in the end, it's better that you can call the shots yourself. Then you have your chance, you know. But it should not be the case that if you do something wrong, you don't get hurt. It should not be like that. You should get exactly what you give, or else everything gets crazy. You know, so it's easier for me to live in a world where everything's logical and you get what you give, right? And that you can't destroy a seed. But I think Todd's real question, which I'm trying to avoid, is isn't it ruining the justice of things if you can scorch a seed or disarm a seed? The Diamond Cutter Sutra says it will open in any case. When I give DCI talks, especially to Chinese people, because they're into Diamond Cutter Sutra for the last 1,200 years, you know. That's their big book. So they appreciate the Diamond Cutter Sutra. But in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, Lord Buddha says, rather than thinking of it as a seed that you destroyed, think of it as you impelled the seed to go off too early. So, you know, those of you who are gardeners, you shouldn't plant a seed too early, right? And I can think of, you put a watermelon seed on the on my porch. I have a wooden porch. And then you put water on it. It will try to open. If it gets sunlight, it will split open. And this little thing will come out, and then it will die for lack of sustenance or nutrition. What do you call it? Nutrients. It'll die for lack of nutrients. I think maybe that's an answer to your question. Because in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, the example is, yeah, you're supposed to die in a car accident, but you do your four powers. And so this, doing the four powers, maybe it's better for us to think of it that we trigger the opening of the seed prematurely, and then you just get a terrible migraine. And by the way, unexpected, never before happened, intense problems in your life are very often successful confessions. Okay, it feels like that, like the seed opened too early and there's this sudden bizarre problem in your life and it goes away in 2 days and that's the end of it. And that's how it feels when a karma opens too early, when you push a karma to open too early. Okay, so maybe justice is still there. There's still a justice. That's as close as I can get. You don't get the full power of what you're supposed to get. But maybe that's okay because it went off too early.
And it sounds like you also couldn't pick it exactly, either the one that was right, but I mean...
Oh, can you pick your seeds to go off too early?
The exact seed.
You can. I mean, that you have to be able to do that. So that gets into another question, which I'll do. You either remember a bad seed that you planted, or you can deduce that you planted a bad seed because something bad is happening to you now. So I get a certain kind of headache, or the doctor says I have a certain illness. Then I don't remember planting a seed like that, but logically I must have. And then you can do purifications on a seed that you don't remember planting based on what's happening to you. And those kind are good to do fast, like heavy duty purification fast, because you didn't have time to, what do you call that, preempt it. You didn't have time to anticipate it opening. You forgot that you planted it. So then once it starts opening, you have to act fast. The doctor says I might have a breast cancer. They did a biopsy. I'll find out on Wednesday. Between now and Wednesday, you better do some goddamn good four powers. You know, and you can change the reality. That's the cool thing. You can change the reality. If you work really hard between now and Wednesday, the, what do you call it? Verdict or what do they call it? The results of the test can change. You know, we had an example at Diamond Mountain. One of the regular staff at Diamond Mountain, his wife had a heart attack, a very serious heart attack, stroke. And they went to the hospital and they drew a blood sample and they said, you know, yeah, put her in immediately. Give her all these drugs. They had her all drugged up and all these, intravenous. And then we did some really powerful prayers. We really worked hard on it. And then the next morning he went back and the doctor takes him in the room and he says, you know, I'm so sorry we freaked out yesterday because we did a blood test this morning. It's like there's nothing there at all. You know, I'm so sorry and I really apologize because, you know, they jammed all this stuff into her and she was like laid out. You know, they said she couldn't go home for weeks. And he said, take her home, you know. It was a misreading of the blood test. You know, so you can change those things. And we should, right? We should try. So, but based on a deduction of the problem, the nature of the problem, I must have done blah, 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 even though I don't remember. Okay? I think we stopped there.